send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand, absolutely free. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe, for the next hour. We're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Special guests on the show include Chad Money Mendez, who has his impeccable rematch coming up on Saturday night versus Jose Aldo Jr. for the UFC Featherweight Championship of the World. We'll also be joined by Executive Director for the California State Athletic Commission, Mr. Andy Foster, who's going to give us a little glimpse on the future of weight cutting, something I discussed with Big John McCarthy a couple of weeks back. And in the second block, we're going to hear from a man, Dwayne Finley, at Dwayne Finley MMA on Twitter. This guy has incredible energy, one of my favorite guys in the industry, and we'll talk all kinds of headlines from the world of mixed martial arts, including something that's been kind of caught my eye recently with Scott Coker taking over Bellator and things that could be changing there. But we'll kick things off right now, a conversation I had earlier on with Chad Mendez. I apologize for the audio. Hopefully it'll come through a little clearer. There was a recorded conversation over the phone, so both my voice and his will be a little bit sort of lower than normal, but at the same time, I actually woke Chad up because of the time of the interview and the time change. He agreed to do it, but unfortunately, he was probably still in bed when I made the call. But without further ado, here's my conversation with Chad Mendez.
What's up, Money Mendez?
Not much, man. Just hanging out. Tired as hell. I just woke up.
No, I don't blame you, man. It's got to be a long trip down there from Sacramento down to Brazil, but you are days away from something you have wanted to take place for a very long time. How are you feeling as we get closer to this fight?
I feel good, man. Camp went great. Injury-free. My weight's on point. Everything's going good, man.
Good to hear. Good to hear. Now, I want to ask you something that, unfortunately, I never had a chance to ask you. Well, the last time I saw you guys in Sacramento and the incredible hospitality at Uriah and Dwayne and everyone kind of gave to me, especially with TJ. But when I watched that fight for the first time with Jose Aldo, I kind of wondered, obviously, with that fence grab, and I thought to myself, whoa, Yamasaki's got to stop this, and he can't let this continue. And then we saw what happened there. Do you remember the fence grab, or were you in a transitional position where you're still trying to figure out what was going on?
Oh, no, I clearly remember. I remember being pissed off, and I remember looking at the ref like, dude, what are you going to do about that? And he didn't do anything at all, so I just kept fighting. But he should have stopped that and taken a point for sure.
Well, 100%. That's what referees are supposed to do. But it is what it is. It is the past. You've now moved forward. You've had an electric run since that fight versus Jose Aldo. You get this rematch right now. Give me the difference, because I've been reading some of the interviews and some of the stuff that's been posted online about who Chad Mendez was the first time he fought Jose Aldo versus the guy who was fighting him this Saturday night. What's the difference in terms of a fighter?
I think there's a lot of stuff that's different. I mean, I feel like I've grown up a lot since that first fight. And this is my fourth time to Brazil, so this is all something I'm used to. I'm not, you know, it's not a big surprise to me anymore like it was the first fight. I'd only had two fights under my belt fighting them that first time, and obviously have quite a bit more now. So kind of, you know, I'm just used to being in an octagon. I'm a lot more comfortable in there. And I think the biggest thing that's changed, though, is having a head coach. We didn't have one the first time, and, it makes a huge difference. You just don't see, you know, any world-class athletes or teams without a head coach. And, you know, that was before was basically just us helping each other out. So, we got a head coach. Dwayne Ludwig came in, you know, really improved all of our striking games and, you know, all around mixed martial arts. And, you know, you guys have gotten to see it the last couple years. And, I just feel like all in all, I've just matured so much more as a person and as a fighter. So, I think the second time around is going to be a lot different. You know, this is the first time anyone's got to fight Jose two times, you know, and I think everyone's kind of beat before they even get into the octagon due to the, you know, just the intimidation factor. I've got to get in there. I felt his speed and his power, and I truly believe that I can beat him.
In terms terms of looking at Jose now as an opponent, there seems to be, from what I gather, a bit of a disdain. And I've never seen you emotional before a fight. I don't really see you that emotional this time either. But there seems to be something about you that's bringing a different side of Jose Aldo out. Do you think you're in his head right now?
Yeah, for sure I think I am. I mean, I'm making this a grudge match. I mean, this is personal for me. This is, you know, a fight that's about the title, but it's about redemption and payback. You know, he beat me, he beat Faber. You know, and this is something I want very bad. You know, and it was supposed to happen in my hometown. I had tons of people that were already coming, friends and family, fans. You know, he backs out and he gets moved to his hometown. So, you know, now I'm making sacrifices and coming over here. You know, so I'm doing this for that belt. You know, and it pisses me off that you know, he gets rewarded for getting injured, but... you know, it just fuels my fire. That just makes me want to beat the hell out of him even more. So, you know, this is, you know, it became personal. He came into the media talking a ton of shit about steroids and, you know, just talking shit about kneeing me in the face. And, you know, he made it very personal. You know, I got in his face in the stare down. He shoved me. You know, he lost his temper. You know, he went into the media right after that and was trying to backpedal and say, oh, you know, me and my coach had talked about it, and we wanted to try to sell the fight. That's why I shoved him. Yeah, right. If that was the case, then you wouldn't come into the media right after and say that. You wouldn't just blow it out of the water like that. He was backpedaling. He lost his temper, looked like a jackass. And, you know, it's perfect. That's exactly where I want to be. I'm in his head. I'm making this a grudge match, and it's going to be a fun fight for the fans.
Walk me through the emotional state that you have to maintain. You step into the cage, in hostile territory, because you know they're going to have that chant where, you know, you should be dying in the octagon, you're going to die, and all that stuff there. B, stepping in against a guy that you really, like you said, you want that redemption. But C, you have to maintain a clear head because this is a fight. It's a mixed martial arts bout, and if you get too emotional, you end up burning up too much energy. How do you maintain your focus and not get overly charged?
Yeah, man, I totally agree. And like I said, this is my fourth time to Brazil. You know, my second time fighting in front of them. But, I mean, I hear the you're going to die chant every time I see fights in Vegas. Now, you know, it's all over the place. The Brazilian fans are, you know, all over it. It's nothing new to me. You know, it was the first time, and it was a little overwhelming, but it's something I, you know, it doesn't bother me at all now. It's basically... I know it's something that they say at every sporting event. So it's nothing that to take personal. It's nothing, you know, overwhelming at all. You know, so for me, you know, I've been competing in athletics since I was 5 years old. And, you know, I've learned over the years how to tunnel vision and how to block things out. You know, and that's not going to be anything new.
On the line right now with Chad Mendes on UFC Central. Chad, I want to think about a couple of things heading into this fight here, especially the type of performance you're looking at having. Now, I haven't been around this game as long as both you and I have and talking to so many different people across the globe. A fight's a fight. It can end in the first minute. It can go 25 minutes. If you had a perfect script for a fight versus Jose Aldo to prove a point, to make a statement to everybody in this division, do you want a long, drawn-out fight where you potentially punish this guy, where you show your warrior spirit, or do you want to end this thing quick?
I mean, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, in a perfect world, you know, I train hard as hell. I go through so much red line in the gym as far as just putting my body through the ringer. You know, it'd be unbelievable to get out there and knock him out in the first 30 seconds. But, you know, on the other hand, there's a part of me that's like, I want to get out there and I want to punish this guy for 25 minutes and make a statement and show to everybody that I am the best and that it's not a fluke that I just caught him. So, you know, I could definitely see wanting both sides.
Do you buy the theory that even guys like Dana White say that, you know, even after that Mark Holloway fight, that Jose Aldo is probably the best 15-minute fighter in the sport, that after 15 minutes, when we get into rounds 4 and 5 of the championship rounds, that he begins to fade away? Do you buy that theory?
Yeah, I totally do. You know, and you know, I think Jose is a great athlete, and I think he has great cardio, you know, for doing what he needs to do. I think a lot of the times when he knows he has to fight one in the later round, he doesn't push through. He doesn't push through any pain. He knows, all right, I have this one. I can kind of coast and chill. Just don't get caught with anything, you know. And it's bad to have that mindset. You know, I've always learned that wrestling, you never coast. You never get on a lead and coast. Anything could happen. And he does that a lot. and to me, that just shows mental weakness. You know, he's not willing to, you know, keep pushing through that pain, keep pushing to where you could possibly finish this guy and end the fight. You know, it's all about coasting. So it's a bad mindset to have, I think.
Now, it goes without saying, Jose Aldo Jr. is one of the best pound-for-pound fighters in the sport, but that's not to say that if you beat him, you should be involved in that conversation. I don't know if you've thought of that heading into this fight, because I'm sure the focus has been on trying to figure out ways to make sure you defeat this guy. But if you beat Jose Aldo Jr., should Chad Mendes not be considered one of the pound-for-pound best in the sport as well?
Oh, of course. You know, I honestly already consider myself one of the best pound-for-pound fighters. So you know, nothing. It's not going to be anything new in my mind, but it's just going to be new to everybody else that, you know, hasn't been thinking about it. So, you know, it's already there in my head.
In terms of all the guys that you prepared for in this fight, we got to see that Nate Diaz on that first embedded episode. Nate Diaz made an appearance at Team Alpha Male. You got to give us some thoughts on what Nate Diaz told you to get ready for Jose Aldo. What did Nate say?
I mean, me and Nate didn't honestly talk a whole lot about me and Jose, but yeah, Nate's one of my buddies. I see Nate a lot. They come in, him and Nick come into the gym and work out with us. But you know, it's nothing new seeing Nate.
Now, in terms of moving forward, before we end this interview here, I want to think about the guy that kind of made some derogatory comments towards you overseas, Conor McGregor. He could be the next guy in line. It could be a guy that you face off next. I know you got to focus on Jose, but do you have a message for Conor McGregor based on what he said to you in that interview?
Oh, man, Conor McGregor is the biggest twerp I've ever even heard of in my life. I mean, this guy is a complete dud. He talks his talks all the way up to the top, but you know, there's a lot of things I want to say to him that I can't say on TV. But I don't know. There's a lot of stuff. You know, there's a few things I want to say to him. You know, I've studied your fights, and you know, aside from being able to run your mouth, you're also good at giving up. I've seen you tap out before, which means you know, you can talk a big game. But when push comes to shove, you know, you quit, you give up. Things get dangerous, and it's just a fair warning, dude. When you fight me, it's going to be a dangerous fight. You may want to watch your mouth, and when you talk to me, you know, I know you think you're the Jolly Green Giant, and you're this fucking huge dude. It's all up in your head. Cool.
Listen, thank you much for your time, and I wish you the best of luck on Saturday night.
There you have it, my conversation a little earlier today with Chad Money Mendes. All right, from one California native to the executive director of the California State Athletic Commission, Mr. Andy Foster joins us on the line right now to talk about upcoming changes in the world of mixed martial arts and boxing, per se, when it comes to weight cutting. Mr. Foster, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Listen, thank you very much for coming on here. There's a few things I want to discuss, and it all stems from my interview a couple of weeks ago with Big John McCarthy regarding weight cutting and hydrostatic testing. But before we get to that, one thing I didn't know when I recently found out, you're a former mixed martial artist, a solid record of 9-2. I mean, do you miss competing in that nature?
No.
You're pretty successful, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I enjoyed it while I did it. I certainly, I really, really enjoyed it, but I enjoy trying to create an environment so others can do it in a safer, tough environment than I did then.
And that's exactly what brings me to this next point, because the question I did ask John McCarthy is, I firmly believe there is going to be a change in weight cutting and weigh-ins in the very near future. And he mentioned that I should give you a call because hydrostatic testing is beginning to get some major play in the amateur mixed martial or the amateur wrestling world. I believe it's coming to mixed martial arts. What's your take on the future of weight cutting and weigh-ins in mixed martial arts?
Well, next week I'm actually going to Las Vegas to discuss this issue with the Association of Ringside Physicians. What I can tell you is something's going to be coming. We're going to try. I'm going to have Greg Serb from Pennsylvania. He's going to be there. We're going to discuss. I spoke with David Berlin from New York. We're going to be discussing it, and hopefully we can get Bob Bennett in there, but we want something to happen. And I think the caliper, I don't know exactly what you call it, but that tool that they put on the neck that measures like a fat content and that type of thing that they use in the wrestling, they've had some good success with that. So I think that's certainly coming. Okay, that's certainly coming. Another thing I think would be certainly the gold standard and something I would support is the hydrostatic testing to determine the minimum weight you can fight at for that year. Much like, I'm not sure if they do the hydrostatic testing in wrestling, but they do certify a lowest weight to compete at. And then in professional sports, you could contract at that weight or higher for that year. So those are two ideas. Another idea is having two weigh-ins, one the day before, one the next day, and ensuring that the fighter doesn't gain more than 7% over that period to avoid over hydration or I've been told through the studies that it takes the fluids more time to fully integrate and to fully hydrate the brain, the blood-brain barrier and all this type of thing. I'm not a doctor. I'll hear these things. But I do think that we can take steps to improve because what we have right now is not working.
Now, in terms of implementing something like this, and I know it's going to happen. I firmly believe it's going to happen. But like anything in human nature, people try to avoid change. They combat change. It becomes a confrontational issue. Are your peers on board? Do you think there'll be enough people, whether it's with the Association of Ringside Physicians or the Association of Boxing Commissions, that will jump on board with something like this? Because the bottom line is, Andy, you and I both know, this is in the best interest and in the safety for all combatants.
Well, you know, we certainly, I think the ARP is certainly on board with doing something. They issued their statement last year about weigh-in. I talked to Mauricio Suleiman from WBC this past weekend, and he and I are going to chat about this. And I understand this is, you're talking about mixed martial arts, but it's also a boxing issue. Will others join? I'm not sure that we're going to need 50 states to join. I think we basically need four or five to agree that this is the way it's being done, and then we can take that proposal to the ABC, and I think the ABC will pass it. I have a great relationship with Tim Lukianoff. I think Tim Lukianoff wants to keep fighters safe. It's just, how do you go about doing it? And we're trying to have those talks to not affect the industry adversely, but at the same time, something's going to change, and we just want to make sure, because it's not one or the other. We can have safety with the same things that the industry won't. We're just trying to get to that point.
What do you make of the studies right now that are coming out, and they seem to be coming out almost on a semi-regular basis, where dehydration, there is a big correlation, and you mentioned it in your second to last answer there. There's a correlation with dehydration and traumatic brain injury because, simply put, the body cannot rehydrate itself quick enough. The brain is made of water. So there's an issue there, and they're starting to come out with these facts that, look, too much dehydration causes traumatic brain injury. I mean, is this one of the catalysts that said to guys like yourself that, you know what, we need to change stuff here?
There's no question. This was on my radar screen, okay, based on what you just said. What really got, I suppose what really got me into a panic, so to speak, was after the UFC here in Sacramento, the day of the weigh-in, we have two of our fighters unable to weigh in or our licensees because they've lost too much weight. I think that's a problem, and that's what kind of spurred me to start taking action. But, of course, what you said, the correlation between TBI and dehydration has been on our map. We've been looking at this for a while now. But we, what I can tell you, California, we're going to do something. Something's going to happen. And if no other states join us, that's unfortunate. We don't want that to happen. We're having meetings so that others will join. Well, I can tell you, something's going to happen here.
Fair enough. And what about the relation, not the relationship, but in terms of the feedback and the potential of promoters and fighters saying, we don't want to do this? I mean, are you ready for that?
You know, I don't think that there's a promoter out there that wants fighters to be unsafe. I just, I'm talking about major promoters. Okay, our major promoters, UFC, Bellator, Golden Boy, Top Rank, these promoters, Goosen, these promoters want to keep people safe. It's just everybody's got some different ideas of how to go about it. And, you know, we don't want to mess up the weigh-in procedure that has been like it's been for, I don't know, 30 years or so. Where you have the day before weigh-in, because that's a marketing tool, but at the same time we want to make sure that the fighters are safe, and we're going to put in steps. I think this is a multi-approach that we're talking about doing here. It'd be the gold standard, and this is more of an incremental change to get to this down the road. But we have the neck caliper test. I think that's a good idea. We would have the two weigh-ins, the first weigh-in, just like we have now, a second weigh-in there when the fighters arrive to make sure they've not overhydrated. And then I think another thing that we could look at doing is this, what you mentioned was the hydrostatic testing, where we establish the lowest weight, and then that lowest weight be placed on the fighter's permanent record, both on the ABC database and on the Fight Facts database. So when a commission pulls the Fight Facts, or a commission looks up a record, we can see right here, and then we can make sure that they're not contracted for less than that amount of weight.
Is this something? And this will be the final question, because I know you're pressed for time, and I want to make sure we get this done right. Is this something that you would also, and it might be a silly question, but something you will also implement at the amateur level, both for mixed martial arts and for boxing?
You know, I've not gotten to that point where that's the first time I've actually thought about that question, because but the idea, just I'll tell you, the idea in broad sense is, dehydration affects amateurs just as it affects professionals. There's no difference on that. Obviously, whatever we would recommend for pros, typically the way it works in California is whatever's recommended for professionals, the amateurs are even safer than that. So, absolutely, I mean, if we recommended something, then the amateurs would have to comply with that or safer.
Mr. Foster, there is never enough time to have you on this radio show, but we thank you for your time, and I look forward to having you on again.
Okay, thank you so much.
There you have it, the Executive Director for the California State Athletic Commission, Mr. Andy Foster. All right, coming up after the break, one of my pals from the industry, Dwayne Finley, to discuss all things from the world of mixed martial arts. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Shodan Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Bellator, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. Let's not waste any time. I want to bring on a man waiting on the line, a guy that I hold dear to my heart because he's just one of the best dudes in this industry. And I know I say that a lot about some of the guys that I bring on the air, but this guy here, his energy is so contagious. One of my favorite dudes in mixed martial arts, Dwayne Finley. Mr. Finley, how are you today?
I'm doing great, brother. I mean, how could I be better? I'm talking to the most handsome man in all of Canada land.
I appreciate that. Listen, I got to ask you, though. I've been paying very close attention to a lot of your tweets and, of course, your Instagram posts about the road trip. I think that was your third leg. Is that your final leg, or will there be more? I mean, give us the latest on that, because it looked like so much fun.
I'm gonna give you the showdown exclusive. The road trip is done. It's planned three legs of the trip go coast to coast, a 10,000 mile adventure. But there's a fourth installment in the talks. Actually, before the 2014 comes to close. So as more information comes out on that, I'll definitely let you know first. But yeah, for right now, road trip is done as it is.
Now, in terms of this last leg here that you just did here, there was a lot of stuff with Jim Miller. There was an excellent Instagram post yesterday about you guys doing not a competitive dance-off, but just a sort of a glimpse into each other's past. I mean, that must have been a great time with the Miller brothers for sure.
I'll tell you what, Joe. I mean, you've worked with Jim and Dan before, as I have many times, and I always just had the feeling that there just was more there that we weren't seeing or that wasn't getting out there about these guys. And I'll tell you, I made a lot of stops over the course of this year on this trip, but there's possibly none more rewarding than a day in their element. You know, I went camping with them. I got to see the family dynamic. Their father came along on the trip, and the thing about it, which I don't think the MMA viewing public understands, is these two, Jim and Dan, are two of the most funny guys I've ever met in my entire life. I can't say that, I mean, while I was terrified of bears the entire time, we kept the laughter rolling pretty solid. So yeah, they're incredible people. Their family dynamic is amazing. And just the things that they've been through together, and they've held together, and that bond, man, that's just something that I really think MMA fans need to get a hold of, because everybody, you know, loves to watch them fight. They see the heart in their fights. But, man, these two gentlemen are something special.
Now, where can people read about this stuff?
Bleacher Report. If you go to Bleacher Report and then you click on, you know, the MMA section where I work, my profile's up there. Just click on that, and then the Road Trip Project is currently up on my profile. But if you follow me on Twitter at DwayneFinleyMMA, I just recently posted all three links back-to-back-to-back, you know, January, March, and then October. And then, yeah, so you can kind of read the whole thing as it unfolded. So, it still hasn't all settled in, if that makes sense.
Yeah, listen, I wanted you to make sure you promoted it accordingly, because people that listen to this radio show have heard me speak about it on numerous occasions, even when you weren't on the show, because I simply find it absolutely a beautiful experience in terms of the dynamics of us guys working in the media, that there's so much more than just us guys writing articles or hosting TV shows or radio shows. Getting into the lives of some of these fighters is absolutely an eye-opening experience, and a lot of the guys in the media don't get to do that because, you know, they're hired by their certain companies, they go out there, they report, they go back home. Guys like us can actually get out there and, you know, like, for example, my experience with George St. Pierre and Faraz Ahabi and a lot of the Canadian fighters based in the Toronto region, I get to see them outside of their element, outside of the gym, and it's those are the stories that I love to tell. It's not just breaking news, Dwayne, it's the stories about each and every one of these individuals.
Oh, you couldn't have said it better, Joe. I mean, I've said this, you know, time and time again, and I don't know whether people take it for anything from it, but I don't consider myself anywhere near journalistic. I'm a storyteller. I don't come from a journalism background. I come from a creative writing background. I was writing books before I was doing this MMA thing. I just want to tell stories. So you're exactly right. The guys like yourself and myself, we can go where other people really can't go, and we have some freedoms that other people don't have, and it's in those places where the cameras are off, when these guys loosen up, you get to see who they really are. And I really think, you know, we have a passionate MMA fan base that they want to know more than what they see on that television, you know, on Saturday nights, and guys like us, we get the opportunity to tell those stories. And that's where the passion comes for me. I mean, I love the sport as a whole, but, you know, it's the fighting side of it, man, that, you know, these guys, how they came to be what they are, and, you know, the stories behind it. I mean, I could tell those stories, and I probably will for you know, as long as I'm still cognizant.
We're talking to Dwayne Finley right now. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Dwayne Finley MMA. Check out his Instagram as well. It's always fantastic stuff, some of the craziest stuff out there. I got to tell you, this week, though, you opened up my heartstrings. You pulled on my heartstrings. You posted a poster, the movie poster for No Country for Old Men. Got to say, that might be the greatest of all time for yours truly. I can watch that movie over and over again. In fact, I've got it lined up on my TV as we speak.
Yeah, when you replied with the goat on Instagram, that movie is one of the rarest. Okay, I'd heard great things about the story, and I picked up the book first. It's one of the rare things. I read a lot, but I'm not usually in the pop culture realm. So like, I picked the book up, and I was like, oh my goodness, it floored me. And then I watched the movie. And I was blown away. The movie brought it to life so well. But you know, the thing is that, like, the thing I think really kind of threw a lot of people off is I don't think a lot of people even realize, still watching it maybe once or even twice, that the story's about Tommy Lee Jones. It's not about what you see going on. The story's about Tommy Lee Jones, and the ending is so powerful when he realizes that there's something out there in Sugar that he can't stop or understand. He knows it's time to wrap it up, and man, I know you got it. So that ending just like locked it up for me, and yeah, I definitely hold it in one of my top three, all time films.
Yeah, I mean, I got goosebumps on top of goosebumps just thinking about it. I can't wait to watch it again. But one thing I'll be watching on Saturday night, of course, is Jose Aldo versus Chad Mendes 2, UFC 179 going down in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro. Chad Mendes, obviously, I mean, on the surface level, when you look at this fight, Dwayne, you got to figure Jose Aldo early in the first 15 minutes. But if Chad can withstand the damage that'll be coming from those leg kicks, he might be able to pull this thing off in the championship rounds. Your thoughts on this bout?
Well, it's a fascinating thing because, in my mind, you get caught up in winning streaks. At least I do. Like, and I'll admit the Dillashaw upset of Barral, it had a lot to do with it too. Like, I'm looking at Chad Mendes blowing through people, and then Dillashaw, pulls off the seemingly impossible against Barral, and then I start thinking that this is Mendes's fight. Like, Mendes is on the roll, but then you have to just revisit the fact of how great Jose Aldo is. On my road trip, I talked to Frankie Edgar on one of my stops, and Frankie brought a point. He goes, "Hey," he's like, "Jose steamrolled a lot of people, but he didn't steamroll me." And while that's true, you look at who Mendes has beat in this last five, Clay Guida and Nick Lentz, yeah, the other three, you could kind of take them or leave them. But look at the last 12 Jose Aldo just ran through. I mean, it's amazing. So, yeah, I think we kind of tend to forget how great Jose Aldo is, but there's a lot of pressure on him. He's the last standing Brazilian champion. There's a lot of heat between these two guys, and I think that, he has proved that he does fade a little bit. So if Mendes can weather the storm, so to speak, I think he has a really great chance. But then there's something in my mind that's kind of telling me that this just might not be close at all. Like, this might just be an Aldo statement, a la what Anderson Silva did when we kind of forgot about him, after at UFC 101. I'm not saying he's going to force Griffin in, but I'm saying we could see something. We could see another truly special performance with no fence grab this time.
Now, you mentioned something ironic there. Jose Aldo, the last standing Brazilian champion. If Chad Mendes does emerge victorious, every single belt under the Ultimate Fighting Championship banner will belong to Americans. What does that say about the state of mixed martial arts, A, in the U.S., and B, globally?
Well, I think it points at the progression. I mean, if we look at how the history of MMA in this 20 years has unfolded, we've seen the dominance of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Then we saw the era of the wrestler, and then strikers start to figure out how to stuff wrestling and force guys to stand. What I think we're in right now, it's not an era of styles; it's an era of progress. That the guys who are working hard to evolve their games are going to stay on top. Guys who have settled in and kind of they do what they do, they're going to be in trouble. It may last for a little while, but see, and that was kind of I interviewed Chad as you did, what Chad said was, I've had to progress. Jose has, he's damn good at what he does, but he's had no reason to kind of go back to the drawing board and change his things up. I don't think that's the case with Jose. I mean, I think it's nice for Chad to think that, but I think Jose is a special fighter, and I think he's going to move, he was 20, 22, 23 when he won that title. Now he's 28, and he's not resting on anything. So I think if Chad does bring the belt back, then I think it just further signifies the fact that progression and constant evolution is what's going to make you successful in this game.
In terms of progression, the light heavyweight division, the co-main event, we got Glover Teixeira taking on Phil Davis. I'm really intrigued by this fight because there's so much at stake here, especially for a guy like Phil Davis who wants to get closer to that title shot. I think the pressure is on Mr. Wonderful to win this fight because if Glover does end up losing, he's already fought for the title. He can work his way back up. If Phil loses, he's going to be in big trouble here.
Oh, man, you couldn't have said it better. I think, and to take it a step further, I think there's additional pressure on Phil Davis to become the guy, the fighter that he was expected to be 2 years ago before he ran into Rashad Evans. You know, here's a guy who made everything look easy. His first couple fights out, he submitted Gustafson, you know, things of that nature. And then, you know, he was kind of touted as that guy who was going to give Jones a run for it. You know, the last 2 years haven't been great for Phil Davis. I mean, he's won some fights, but even in those wins, he didn't look great. I mean, in the Magalhaes win, Wagner Prada fights, you know, there weren't great performances, but he got the victory. And then against Rumble, you know, Anthony Johnson, there's big problems in Phil Davis's game, and if he can shore those up, you know, then he's gonna be in good shape. But there's a ton of pressure on Phil Davis to win this fight, and I absolutely agree with you, Joe, that I don't think Glover's carrying half the weight that Davis is carrying right now.
Now, I spent my morning taking a look at some of the Scott Coker interviews that have been posted online here, and I got to tell you, Dwayne, I'm sort of blown away and have a brand new, or maybe a almost a vintage or nostalgic appreciation for a guy like Scott Coker and what he can bring to the table. And some of the stuff that he was saying in some of these interviews that I tweeted at Showdown Joe got me thinking, is this guy, you know, a reoccurring pain for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, most specifically Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta, like that injury that keeps coming back when it gets cold outside and it starts raining? Or is he some sort of cure that is going away? I'm trying to figure it out because he is dropping some bombshells in some of these interviews that, for me, makes me look at 2015 and say, it's going to be an interesting new chapter in the world of mixed martial arts next year.
Absolutely. I'm in full agree with you as always. But here's the thing. When Coker came on board, you know, there was a lot of negative energy surrounding Bjorn Rebney. And I'm sure you remember the day on Twitter when it was announced, there was a kind of a renewed kind of refreshed look at Bellator. And then him dropping the tournament format, you know, that was crucial. And it made sense when Bellator's first getting started, but it caused a ton of problems. In all reality, you could honestly say it cost them two great fighters in Ben Askren and Eddie Alvarez because they couldn't keep them busy because they're waiting for these tournaments to play out. But, you know, as Scott said in those interviews, it doesn't make sense anymore. And then moving to one card a month, you know, stacking up the divisions, giving the fight fans want to see, and Joe, it was his honesty in those interviews. He's like, you can't put on tournaments filled with fighters that nobody wants to see, because he said the fans won't care, the media won't care, nobody will care. And Scott was speaking the truth. What Scott has done is lay out a realistic, you know, he said 18-month plan. He said, give me 18 months and then we can see what's going on. And I'll tell you what, I'm all on board for those 18 months because, like he said in the Fight Hub interview, he started Strikeforce with four contracted fighters, Kung Lee, Shamrock, Melendez, and Thompson. And look where he went from there. So I think, I definitely think Scott Coker at the helm of Bellator is going to be one of the biggest stories of 2015.
I think there's no doubt in my mind, and it always made me wonder, when Zuffa purchased Strikeforce, they brought on Scott Coker, but basically didn't do a thing with him, left him on the side, and I guess until that contract expired, he ends up leaving, bang, ends up at Viacom, ends up at Spike. I mean, do you not think or believe somewhere, despite how competitive Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta are, that that's bad news for them?
Yeah, it does, because we see this in other sports like management. You'll see a guy get brought into a GM role, you know, that has bounced around a little bit. Guys who continue to get work, there's a reason for it, and there's a reason Scott Coker has continued to resurface. in this MMA business because he's damn good at what he does, and he's proven that with how he built Strikeforce. I think maybe the big mistake is maybe when he was with under the Zuffa umbrella, you know, he obviously had a non-compete for a while, but he didn't, you know, when Reed Harris left the WEC, he was more than happy to take a different job in Zuffa, and that's what he does now. Scott Coker's not that kind of animal. You know, he kind of just laid low, and then when it was his time to go, he went and jumped on another opportunity. So maybe this all turns out where they, you know, UFC should have maybe put him in a bigger role instead of just kind of sitting him on the sidelines. You know, maybe he comes out and has maybe he's poised to have a Kurt Warner, Kurt Warner resurgence and taking the Rams to the Super Bowl. I don't know, but I'll tell you what. Talking to you right now, I can guarantee I'm 90 times more excited to see what Bellator has to offer, you know, than I have been for the past 6 years.
And the one thing I'll leave you with, I've got a couple more questions for you, but I want you to think about one thing, Dwayne, as well as all the listeners that are tuning in right now. This is not my original idea. This was proposed to me about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago, before you and I got into this conversation, by someone who was very, very, I'm not going to say powerful in the industry, but he's a manager, and he represents some really good clients. He said, let me throw this at you, Joe. Floyd Mayweather's getting into the mixed martial arts business, and the fact that he comes from a business that enjoys co-promotion, and so does Scott Coker, what do you think about that? And I was like, whoa, hold on a second. Interesting idea here, sir.
Oh, absolutely, man. Like you kind of just kind of blew my mind a little bit with that, because you look at the kind of running joke in MMA is that you attach any Mayweather's name to any article. I mean, how many clicks does a Rousey wants to fight Mayweather article get? I mean, this guy has, you know, the people in MMA know who this guy is. And then bringing a boxing mask over, oh, absolutely, man. If that comes to pass, there could be some fireworks. And you know, another thing Scott said is he said, you know, hey, we're gonna play the free agent market. You know, when it comes our way, we're gonna make some offers to big fighters and see what we can do. If they get a couple big names to cross over, and I'm not saying nothing against Tito and Rampage and things like that, but those guys are, you know, even Scott today was saying, hey, you know, that fight should have happened 5 years ago. We're not talking about guys that are past their you know, athletic primes. If they can grab, you know, some big names, like remember when Melendez was talking about going over there before he got...
I was just going to say that, yep.
Man, yeah, that's, I mean, whew, we could see 2015 could be a race. If a few things break certain ways, it could be really, really interesting to see what goes on in our sport.
All right, one final question before we let you go. My heart absolutely sank when the news came out that Cain Velasquez injured his knee and would not be able to compete in Mexico. It really broke my heart. The good news is that Mark Hunt steps in now for the interim title against Fabricio Werdum. He's a wonderful story, but that whole scenario has me sort of, you know, with mixed emotions. I feel really bad for Cain Velasquez. This would have been a dream come true for him to compete there, headline a show, really break into that market. But Hunt has an excellent opportunity against Werdum, despite the fact I am giving the edge in that bout to Fabricio Werdum. Doom. Your thoughts on how this is going to play out?
Well, I'll tell you what, the Cain Velasquez story, if you look at this guy, he's sitting on the cusp of a legacy that can be solidified as the greatest heavyweight champion that's ever fought in this sport. The problem is he keeps running into these injuries and setbacks. He's not fighting often enough, and he's kind of plagued by this. Cain will be back. There's more to be written on that, and you know, those chapters will come. Now the Hunt for Doom story, I dig it. You know, Mark Hunt, you know, here's a guy who the UFC tried to pay out his contract because they didn't want him. You know, that when he came over from Pride, they're like, hey, we'll just pay you out. We didn't want you. And Hunt said, no, I want to stay and fight. And here's a guy who has completely, it's kind of like, you know, when a movie is not really, you know, it doesn't hit at the box office, but it picks up like a cult classic, you know, like Boondock Saints. Like, Mark Hunt is the Boondock Saints of MMA right now, man. Like,
I love
you know,
it. Yeah.
He's like the punk scene. You know, he just, he comes up and he's not mainstream and he's got his own following. So while I can guarantee you the UFC, was frustrated that, they built this Mexican, market to go, Kane to jump off and help them debut. The Hunt for Doom is still watchable, and I guarantee you this, Joe, that stadium's still going to be packed, and there's people are still going to love it. There's sharp sea fights. It's still going to go down. But on the flip side, as punk as Hunt may be, we're doomed a monster right now. I got Fabrizio.
Listen, thank you very much for your time. We want to wish you the best of luck. We will always keep following you at Duane Finley MMA.
All right, Joe. Take care, brother. It's always great to talk to you, man.
There you have it, Duane Finley. Special thanks to Duane, to Andy Foster, and to Chad Mendes taking on Jose Aldo Jr. this Saturday in Rio de Janeiro. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.